the Undercarded Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Mike Gregg and David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Blackburn. We'll also be looking back at the League Cup victory for Fulham against Middlesbrough. On top of that, we will be discussing the recent signings this week for Fulham. There was two today, and we'll be talking about both of them. But before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. And first of all, I just want to let everyone know that I am remote in Maine, so if my connection isn't the greatest, I apologize. But I am doing this with my mobile phone, so hopefully you can hear me well. First, Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Dave, whenever he appears. Yeah, looking forward to the show. Lots to talk about and cram in over the next hour. And, it's been a busy week for Fulham.
It's been a very busy week, and we have much to get through in these 60 minutes. And I want to bring in our other co-host back to the show, Mr. Holly. How you doing?
Yeah, good evening, Russ. Good evening, Mike. And, yeah, too much to cram into one show, I think, with all today's news.
Absolutely, David. And because of it, I'm going to mention this at the top of the show. There was a topic that I wanted to get through in the show, but we decided that we're going to be doing that on our Wednesday show. Yes, we're going to be doing the end of the transfer window special, where we're going to be looking at all of the signings, and maybe there'll be an additional signing on that Wednesday show. Along with that, we are going to take a very long look at analytics once again. We are going to be discussing that recent article by Sam Wallace in the Telegraph, and also Andy Glockner also just wrote one today called Thoughts on the Great Fulham Analytics War of 2016. So we're going to be giving that basically its own show along with all the signings for the end of the transfer window special Wednesday night. So we will not be doing that tonight. We definitely want to get into that, but that's a big topic. We want to really get into it, and we need more time because we have so much else to get through. So I just want to mention we will be talking about that and the whole thing to deal with the analytics. But before we do anything, guys, let's now get into the show, and let's start with talking about the Middlesbrough match. And, Mike, I'm going to let you take us through it because you were there. Let's just start with the approach of Slavisa in this match. Let's talk about the starting 11. What are your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? Did you think he got that right at the time?
Yeah, I was quite happy with the team. I mean, he kept the core of the first-round team that beat Orient, and obviously gave Josebed his debut, and it was good to see Jack Grimmer, of course, coming at right back. But, you know, there's a few... What are you laughing at, Dave? You know I'm a big Jack fan. You know, it was good to see some of the guys who have been on the bench starting, like Christensen and, Tunnicliffe and Woodrow, who's been sort of in and out. And so, I was quite happy with the lineup. I was a little bit worried, like many, when we saw the Middlesbrough team because, they made a few changes, but they still had a very strong team out. It was, let's hope we could do well. And they got an early goal against us and, it's going to be a tough night. And the way it panned out, first half wasn't the greatest in the world. And Middlesbrough were probably the better side. And, we stuck at it. But, second half, we were easily the better team. It was really good stuff. And passing it around, movement. And, Jezebad had a decent 90 minutes, I would say, where he ran around a lot playing off the striker. Saw a few little bits and pieces from him. The youngsters, Adrian and Teo Eden, they took their time getting into the game. But, second half there was one team and that was us. And, we got the equaliser, got into extra time. And really, I would say the inspired substitution was bringing on Del Torre, for the last half of extra time. And he absolutely, every time he got the ball, he was a live wire running at them, causing problems. And, eventually he was involved in the winning goal. And, it was a decent crowd, decent atmosphere, and it was a really good win. And, in the end, we thoroughly deserved it. And the good thing was, it was, you know, players who we've criticised, you know, like Ream and Tunnicliffe and that. Tunnicliffe for me was man of the match. I thought, you know, he controlled that midfield. And I thought Ream had a really good game, made one great tackle second half. And Christensen, I think, you know, thoroughly deserved to get the winner because, again, we all know what he offers. And, you know, on the day he signed an extension to his contract, there was a nice way to round it off. And, yeah, it was a really good atmosphere and under the lights, thunder and lightning in the distance, rain pouring as well on one of the hottest days of the year. It was a really great evening in the end. And to then get another home, you know, to get a home draw against City gives us a great chance to get through to the fourth round. So, all in all, excellent night.
Okay, very good, Mike. And I want to go right back to you before I get David's thoughts on the result and also the starting 11. Something that stood out to me, a couple things. Scott Malone stood out to me, and I want your thoughts on him. But also, the organization, because I watched the majority of the replay and listen to the match as well. We were difficult to break down, Mike, and that to me was encouraging with a completely different side. I didn't see many great chances for Middlesbrough, and that kind of surprised me. You could look at it two ways. You could say that's on Middlesbrough, but I think a great amount of that had to do with the organization of Fulham, especially defensively. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I did comment about that on Twitter. There was, in the second half, although we were the better side, they had about a 7 or 8 minute spell where the game was played pretty much in front of me in sort of about 25 yards out from the Putney end. And, you know, they had the ball there a lot, but we were defending as a unit, you know, going from left to right. And it was so reminiscent of under Roy, how we defended then. And they were getting, you know, they were rushing their passes and looking for a breakthrough, and we weren't giving it to them. And, you know, Joran wasn't really troubled in goal at all. And that really impressed me. That was something you could see. And this is the, you know, the B team or, you know, second 11, whatever
That's
you
right.
want to call it. And, you know, they're doing things which they've obviously been working on a training ground. And so, when Jurcanovic talks about, you know, there is no A team or B team, it's Fulham squad, they are all singing to the same hymn sheet. They're all working together as a unit and as a team. And to see the youngsters in there as well, you know, the 17 and 18-year-olds doing it, was really impressive. And that just showed that at times the togetherness that we had and or we have in the squad at the moment, but also the bloody hard work they've done in the in pre-season is there for everyone to see at the moment.
Mike, I definitely want to talk about this on a future episode because I think it's difficult for us to really tell, but Stuart Gregg came to us and is still part of the coaching staff, and do you think that a part of this, you know, again, I want to give Jurcanovic and the rest of the staff credit, but Stuart Gregg is known for his defensive teams, is he showing his mark on this team? I'm just asking the question.
Well, I think it's an interesting one to ask because, like I say, that was, you know, the B team or whatever, and they were doing it, and they're the same players from last year, bar a couple of the youngsters, and Malone and Jezabad, yeah? So he's working with the same players he had last year, and we saw the results game after game, that they couldn't defend as a unit. But they were this time, and you know, we've seen it from you know, the back four of Callis and everyone else in the league game. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure Gray, with the upgraded players we've got now, the pre-season, and everyone with their assigned roles from a coaching side, you know, we're not playing a game every other day, so they've had time to work on this. So yeah, it's, you know, it's Gray's influence is having a chance. But we, you know, we lit two goals in the other day, two great shots, and you know, it was still a disappointing goal we lit in the other night. You know, some old habits, which you know, Ream and Malone both got done by Nugent, really. And but you know, overall, in-game play, we're so much better defensively.
Yeah, and it really shows that. Like I said, watching the replay, that was the one thing that stood out to me. And obviously you're seeing it live. You could really talk to that, Mike. That's why I was curious your thoughts about that and the influence of Stuart Gray. I you know, again, I'm just throwing it out there. I think he could be putting his stamp on it, and that's just my thoughts, and that's why I want to bring it to your attention. David, over to you. I just want to get your thoughts on Savitz's approach and talking about with the starting 11. And also, just what do you make of this result? This is really a nice result. Like Mike said, this is really Fulham's B team beating Middlesbrough. I mean, they did have some changes, but not as many changes as Fulham. You're talking about a Premier League set, and they came out with a victory, David. So share with me your thoughts about what happened here at Craven Cottage the other night.
Well, no, it's a very pleasant surprise, you know. I mean, it's on paper you wouldn't expect that to happen, really, with you know, Middlesbrough having, of course, a stronger squad anyway than Fulham because they're in a higher league. And yes, they did make changes. I have a friend who I play tennis with, who's a Middlesbrough fan, and he was trying to hide from me on Thursday at tennis because he knew what I was going to say to him. But he actually said well, actually, no, it was our reserve team as well. He tried to sort of mitigate it, but nevertheless, we had a reserve team. We had lads of 17 and 18 playing in midfield, and that's a big ask. I think midfield is where it all happens. That's why you find older guys like me tend to play in midfield, because it's I think it helps to have experience to play in midfield. It really does. You have to sort of see both parts of the game. You know, in defence, you have to defend, and up front, you expect it to score. But in midfield, you've got to do a bit of everything. So, you know, to put that on a 17 and 18-year-old, and for 120 minutes, of course, as well, you know, it's a real big ask and a very great achievement. And, I mean, you know, it's a very, very pleasing result. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. Normally, Tuesdays, I'm in London, but Wednesdays, I was already on my way home, so I missed it. So that's a big shame. But, you know, we've got a great draw out of it again. And, you know, If we're taking it half seriously now, you'd have to think, you know, we've got to be favourites in the next round, even with changes. Especially now, of course, we've got a few more players coming in and a little bit more strength in depth, I think, because although we do have a lot of players in the background, you know, people like Bodaroff, of course, you could discount him anyway. He's gone. He was never going to figure. You know, and there's going to be other players now in the background we may see the back of. But, you know, I was really pleased for the lads. I'm really pleased for those, who did it, who went to the match. And, you know, it's a bit more, just a smidgen of the old days, the cottage being a fortress, maybe, you know, where northern teams don't want to come midweek all the way along down to London, long trip to London. You know, it becomes a little bit more unpleasant. You know, I feared the worst when we went behind to an early goal. And when I saw the replay, I thought it was a little bit of last season back again. You know, Riemann Stearman there conceding a cross, but, you know, the guys pulled through. Nothing else really to say to it. Great result.
It's a wonderful result, David. And like you said, there's now a great opportunity to progress even further. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in that match. But I'm excited now. We have another League Cup match, and it'll be very interesting to see Savitz's approach in that match as well. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's now focus on the signings. We have three signings this week, and very interesting, all three of them, but let's start with the most recent. So I'm going to read the actual release on the Fulham website, the article, Johansson arrives. I'll just read it, and then we'll talk about the most recent signing. There was another one earlier today, and then there was one a few days ago. So let's start here. It is entitled, Johansson arrives. The club is delighted to announce the signing of Stefan Johansson from Celtic for an undisclosed fee. The 25-year-old Norway international arrives on a 3-year deal with a club option for a further 12 months. Johansson joined FK Bodo Glimt in his homeland as a youngster and was just 16 when he made his senior debut for the club. He later moved on to Strømsgodset, where he enjoyed tremendous success, finishing second in the Tippel Region in 2012, I probably said that wrong, before winning the competition the following year. That would be a Goldman. In January 2014, the central midfielder completed his move to Celtic for a reported £2 million, and he won the Scottish Premiership title in each of his 2.5 seasons at the club. He was named Celtic's Player of the Season and joined Players Player of the Season for 2014-2015. The Pirates have made 114 appearances and scored 20 times. Johansson netted on his Norway debut in August 2013 and has now represented his country on 29 occasions. Okay, Mike, I'm going to start with you. We've seen the speculation for the past couple days about Johansson. It now has finally happened. Thoughts on Stefan Johansson joining Fulham?
Well, he's that defensive midfielder that we've been looking for, although I think McDonald can do the job as well. But if you like, it gives us another option there. You know, Parker, he's done well the last few games, but, you know, the season will start taking its toll on him. And, you know, I know he's coming from Celtic with a bit of a mixed sort of record from some of their fans, but, you know, he was their player of the year a couple of years ago, and, you know, some of them are disappointed to see him going, whatever went wrong last season. So, you know, another player in his mid-20s, long contract. And, I think it was about, they undisclosed again, as usual, but it looks like it was about $2 million. And, you know, I think that's a decent buy, and this is exactly what we need, you know. And I said Tunnicliffe did well the other day, and it's all competition. I think we will see one or two certainly leave over the next few days. But another thing is we've got a couple of weeks break. I know some of them will go off to internationals, but it gives everyone a breather and a chance to the new players, if they don't go away, to learn about Jokanović and what he wants from them. But no, I'm pleased with this signing. I know it's been bubbling around for the last month probably, but you know, get it over the line today. It's you know, the end of a good week on signing so far, and it's not going to be over either.
Well, that's great to hear, Mike. And three in a week is fantastic. And David, I'm going to go to you because Mike mentioned something that I've seen a good amount on social media from all different types of supporters of Celtic. It's been a mixed bag. Some say how good he played for them in one season, and then last season it wasn't great. I've heard from a Celtic supporter that pretty much told me the same thing, that he was their player of the season two seasons ago, but fell off last season. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays for Fulham. Maybe this is the perfect fit for him. I don't know what happened last season, but he did have a very good season two seasons ago. What are your thoughts of the signing, David?
Well, you know what I say about all new signings, and you can tell me that this player is fantastic and has got an excellent record wherever he played, or you can tell me he's been rubbish. But at the end of the day, there's only one opinion that's going to count here, and that's going to be my opinion. I'll make my own judgment on him from what I see, not from what anyone else tells me. So you can tell me he's rubbish, you can tell me he's good, it makes no opinion to me. You know, I want to look for myself and see how he fits in. You know,
and it's
true what you said about the jigsaw and everything, because you know, certain players are certain fits with certain clubs, and you can be good at one place and bad at another, and vice versa. You know, the thing that I wonder about is how are we going to fit all these midfielders in the team? You know, Parker I thought has been excellent. McDonald's been pretty good as well. You know, so is one of them going to lose their place straight away? Are we end up playing Slavica's team of last year with sort of four central midfielders in midfield? I doubt it very much somehow. So I'd be interested to see how this all fits in, whether he's actually been brought in to play. I would have thought so. I don't think you sign many people with the view of putting them on the bench. But, you know, we've got three new people in this week, and everyone's excited, you know, and because we have an almost a whole new team. Literally, we have a whole new team. But, you know, how's it all going to pan out? So far, you know, probably better than expected. But, you know, will more changes augment that or will they disrupt that? That's what we have to see.
A very good point there, David. And I agree with you. One thing that I respect about you, 100% respect you, is that you make your own judgments with your eyes. And that's when you will know if he's a fit. And you can usually make a judgment fairly quickly. And I'm going to go back to you because here's a great example. Scott Malone, David. Scott Malone, we heard all this stuff about him with Cardiff City before he came here, and you basically said, you know, I'll make my own judgment when I see him. So let me ask you, in the small sampling that you've seen from Scott Malone, has he impressed you so far compared to what you had heard?
Yeah, I think compared to the expectation, I'm pleasantly surprised. I don't think he's not quite James' husband, but you know he's okay. He certainly seems to be a better player than Jazz Richards in like for like. I think he can defend as well, and he certainly gets forward better. I think he needs to tweak his game a bit. He needs to be better on his distribution. His final ball does need to be better, but you know he's for someone who's effectively a freebie, replacing a player that no one wanted, you know, you can't really complain. But you know, I think the interesting point is going to come tomorrow now. He played on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I should say. So I was a Goldman there. He played on Wednesday. And now we have an extra defender signed who I assume will go in the team. You would think he'd go in the team. So is Scott Malone going to be the one to miss out? He would be unlucky to do so, but out of the defenders, the new defenders we have, I would have to say he's probably still the weakest, although better than you know, our worst fears so far. So, you know, as I say, I've been pleasantly surprised at him. He's okay. He could be better, but he's not been awful.
Okay, very good there, Dave. That's why I wanted to go back to you about that, because I like how you judge these players by what you see, and that to me is commendable, because that's the way it should be. It should be by what your eyes tell you, and you're excellent at that. Mike, back to you before we move on for talking about Johansson. David brought up a good point. We have a good amount of central midfielders now, and I remember Savisa saying in one of his interviews that he wanted a central midfielder. Well, now he has. You mentioned how well Tunnicliffe played in the last match, but I'm going to ask you, where is Ryan Tunnicliffe's role now that we have now added Stefan Johansson? Is he possibly, say, on the bubbles, we would say, in another sport for being a part of this team this season?
Well, you've got us. I think Jokanović is someone who wants a big squad, in the sense that, not stupidly massive, but he wants lots of options. But if you actually, look at the players we have, I mean, depth-wise, Parker, he's going to play, what is he going to give you? He's going to give you maybe 20 games in the year. And you're going to look at Johansson, McDonald as being probably the two main central midfielders. So Tunnicliffe becomes the third or fourth central choice, possibly, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, I think, is he on the bubble? Could he, if we had a bid or he wanted to leave, would they let him go? I think there's a possibility that, he might be someone that we might look to move on. I still think he's got something to offer, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him go. We allow Bodroff to go. That's released space in the squad. And with all these players coming in, yeah, you've got to look at, Stearman probably will leave. And if you're looking for others, I would have said Tunnicliffe is one who could go as well. I mean, LVC signed his extension the other day, so I don't think he's going anywhere. So, I would say, and to be honest, if I was Tunnicliffe and, I've watched him play this year, and he, like I say, he played really well the other day, but you do see Jokanović react quite badly to mistakes he makes. And I do wonder overall whether he rates him or not. So, I'm just saying, I mean, there's more than a 60% chance that he's going to go before Wednesday.
Okay, very good, Mike. That's why I'm glad that we brought this up, because it's interesting, because he brings in another central midfielder, and I'm thinking about, where does Tunnicliffe fit into all this? So that'll be interesting to follow as Wednesday comes closer. All right, guys, let's move on to the other signing today. And again, this is right on the phone website. I'll read it to you guys as well. It's called Cabano Joints, because this is the name of the player. And here is the announcement from the club. We're happy to be able to announce the signing of Niskanen Cabano on a 3-year contract with a club option for additional 12 months. The 24-year-old attacking midfielder who can operate in a variety of roles arrives from KRC Genk for an undisclosed fee. Born in France, Cabano spent time at the illustrious Clairefontaine Academy, where he attracted the attention of Paris Saint-Germain, and sometime with ASA Montreal, he joined the French giant USetup in the summer of 2006. I'm just going to drop down just a little bit. A French international from under 17 to under 20 level, he since switched his allegiance to the Democratic Republic of Congo, making his debut in October 2014. And there's actually an interview on the website with this player. Definitely check that out. Michael, go right back to you. Thoughts on this signing? Again, we had heard whispers of this for about a week now. What are your thoughts of Fulham bringing in this attacking midfielder?
Yeah, well, he can play on the left wing as well. So, we've been saying that, we're looking for wide men, and he can also play off the striker. So, again, you're looking at this kind of, if he's going to play these two central midfielders, you're looking at where the other four players fit in. And so he's going to be one of those three, isn't he, behind the main striker. So, again, another option, with Aiti getting injured and Williams on loan, your options are LVC, who, despite the hard work he does out wide, he is a central midfielder. And, goes back to, with all these central midfielders, what do you do? Is Tunnicliffe in danger? I think if you're going to use LVC, we'd probably want Tunnicliffe to go to give him an option of playing there. And then you've got Adrian as well, who's done so well. So, lots of players for those positions. But, it's another attacking player. I don't ever recall watching him, live or on TV or anything like that. But, having watched the YouTube videos, he looks good, like everyone does on YouTube. I'm sure Dave would look good on YouTube. So, but he comes with a good pedigree, and he's cost a bit of money, and, you don't spend that kind of money for a player not to be in the first team. I think, we're going to see him pretty early.
Well, I agree, Mike. And one thing that you just mentioned that stood out for me, and I'll go right back to before I go to David, a player that can play several positions, as I was reading it, Fulham now have several players. You mentioned Aiti, Aluko. All these players are, I wouldn't say interchangeable, but you can move around the chessboard. And again, I like the flexibility of these players that they're not pigeonholed into one position, Mike. And Cabano seems to be one of these players. It seems to be a theme with Savisa that he wants players that he can move around. Am I wrong to think that?
Well, no, because if you're watching the games, you're seeing certainly the two wide men swap around. I mean, they've done that in every game I've watched. We've only sort of the Aluko role, if you like, the number 10 role, staying in the middle. Christensen swapped over left and right the other night. And, we've seen Aiti do that as well with Kearney. So he wants interchange. If we're going to play this sort of 4-2-3-1 type formation, then he wants that. And that keeps the opponents guessing, who they're going to play against. Player with left-footed, right-footed, somebody who's going to run at them or, cut inside. And that's what he wants. We've seen him. One of the exciting things about getting Jokanović is that he's open to play different types of formations, and he's not playing left-footed centre-backs at right-back. He might have played Kavanagh at right-back the other day because he's, not many players left in that position. But, it's another option. Go back to that again. That's what he wants to have, and keep things fresh. One of the things, if you listen to his interviews, it's all about how many games and how many players he wants and he needs. And it's a long season. And, teams like Newcastle and Villa are going to find that out. And until you come down to the Championship, you really, even as a fan, if you've been out for so long like we were, and I'm sure Dave would agree with this, you do forget how, 8 more games, how relentless it can be week after week.
No, very good point there, Mike. And I want to go to David. David, I want to get your thoughts on this. And I know you're going to make a judgment when you see him in person. But I really want you to focus more on what we're talking about here. We have all these players in interchangeable parts. You know, I don't know Ayike's status for the match tomorrow. I have a feeling that he's a doubt based on what happened in the last match. But Jokanović wants competition, it seems, at every position. And to be able to move all these players around and, like Mike, potentially play different formations. So what are your thoughts of him bringing in another attacking midfielder? And like Mike mentioned, what we're hearing, he did have to pay some serious money for this player. So what are your thoughts on another player kind of in the mold of Ayike and Luko to be able to move around the chessboard?
Well, there's two aspects to it, really. I mean, you know, the flexibility is great when you have players who can do that. The other side of it sometimes is you get these players who, you know, can play all these positions, but they never really master one position. And, you know, someone perhaps who was, you know, epitified that was sort of like someone like our old friend, and I forgot his name. Oh, another Goldman. I shouldn't have had that glass of rosé before I came on. I knew I'd done it now. Our old friend, Patin Kasami, that's the one. Anyway, Kasami, yeah?
Yeah.
Someone who could play all these roles, but he never really mastered one role, apart from obviously scoring right-footed volleys. But and that's a problem sometimes you can get with a player, though, that's supposedly versatile. They can play all these positions, but do they ever find their best position? I'm not always sure about that. And so it's a sort of double-edged sword, really, that, yes, you do need people who can, you know, if Aiti's out tomorrow, as we believe, who's going to play that role on the left? You know, are we going to fudge it or are we going to play someone who might do a job there? The other thing, though, slightly of concern is, and I'm sure you've seen it on Twitter, there's a certain amount of worry from Fulham fans that someone's going to take Tom Kearney off us. And all these players coming in who are sort of midfield, type attacking midfield players, not dissimilar to what Tom Kearney brings to the table. And apparently there's been some interest in Tom Kearney again, and I don't know how true this is, or whether they would even consider selling him. I hope not. But, you know, there's only so many attacking midfield players you can fit in a team, remember. And the other thing that we haven't addressed here, you know, we've signed another, you know, number 10 maybe tight role attacking midfielder. But what about a striker? That's where we're really suffering. You know, Matt Smith and Corley Woodrow are not the answer. Sure, you know, Matt Smith can do a job with all these players buzzing around him for 60 minutes maybe. But it's a little bit one-dimensional. Corley, I'm not even sure about that, to be honest with you. You need the man up top to be more prolific as a goal scorer, and neither of those are, not really. I think Matt Smith would be my choice over Corley at the moment as the one up top, because at least, you know, he brings other people into the game with his flick downs and stuff. But I still think that's where we're really missing. You can have all these players running around and buzzing around the midfield, but you need someone up top who's going to, like, take advantage of that.
No, Dave, listen, I completely agree with you. I think Fulham need at least one or two strikers, and I believe when I was listening to Slavica's interview, I don't think Colley is going to be featuring in the next match. I believe he came off with a potential injury. I have no idea of the severity of it, but I remember he did come off. Maybe, Mike, you could talk a little bit about Woodrow, what you saw from him coming off and Matt Smith coming on. If we had more time, guys, I tell you, we could definitely talk about the striker position, because I do agree with you, David. They need one or two strikers, and Matt Smith is a nice option, but you need a prolific goal scorer, and right now they don't have one. So that's a very good point by you. I just don't think we have a lot of time to really get into that, and hopefully, when we do our end of the transfer window special, we'll be talking about one or two more strikers, and I hope we do. Mike, back to you. I want to get your thoughts about what David just shared about the strikers. Not really get into the need, because obviously we're all in agreement that they need it, but what did you see from Colley? He did come off in the match, and I believe Slavica did mention that he would not be featuring in this upcoming match. Do you think that this injury was serious, or just maybe he might miss a match or two?
Well, I read that it was a knock on the bone that he broke last year. But it's if he's going to be out, it's just precautionary, really. It's not broke. not broken as far as I know. So yeah, but I mean, on Wednesday, I mean, he had a good chance from a Jack Grimmer low cross, which keeper saved. He had another chance as well, but he's really, I mean, I like Woodrow and watched him in the 18s and 21s. I've never ever felt he was a player who's going to get you 15 goals a season. You know, he's going to pitch in with 10 maybe if he's lucky, if he plays all the games. But he's really disappointing me with his first touch, you know, against Leyton Orient in a couple of the other games I've seen him play. He seems to be almost trying to sort of not kill the ball and sort of try and do a trick or turn with it, and it ends up bouncing away from him. And it's almost like kicking a ball against a brick wall, and he's suffering there. He's not keeping the ball. He works hard, you know, run players down, but yeah, he's had a couple of chances and he's not really taken them, and now he's got the injury, he's going to be out. We are after strikers, we all know that, and you know,
right.
Allegedly there's a couple, or at least one had a medical this week, so they will be in. We will have the strikers in place. I mean, it's lucky we've only got the game tomorrow and then the break, so I'm not too concerned in that area. We'll have one or two in next week. And as to who should be up top, I'm not a Smith fan as a starter. You know, last half hour maybe, but starting, for me, is a guaranteed substitution, and I'm never a fan of doing that. So, another two strikers in, and I'll be well happy.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, let's talk about the other signing this week. This one came to us, I guess you could say, a surprise by many. And I'm gonna read the article on the Fulham website. This happened on Tuesday. Sigurdsson signs. The club is delighted to announce the signing of Icelandic international defender Ragnar Sigurdsson from Krasnodar for an undisclosed fee. He has agreed to a 2-year deal with a club option for a further 12 months. The center back was an integral part of the Iceland team, who exceeded all expectations at the summer's European Championship in France, playing every minute as the Nordic nation reached the quarterfinals, where they were eventually knocked out by the host nation. Fans will be familiar with Sigurdsson after he scored the equalizer for his country in the knockout victory over England, a game which he was named man of the match. His form at the competition subsequently attracted a lot of attention from high-profile clubs across the continent. Sigurdsson began his career at local side Fylke before moving to Swedish outfit IFK Göteborg. As a 20-year-old, he played more than 100 times for the club before moving on to Copenhagen. During his time at the Danish Giants, he featured in the UEFA Champions League and Europa League and won the Superliga and Domestic Cup prior to joining Krasnodar for a reported £3 million in January 2014. Sigurdsson has been a regular in the Russian side backline survival, again sampling Europa League football over the course of the past two seasons. All right, Mike. So he talked about in his interviews that he was looking for a center back. He brought in a center back. Thoughts on Sigurdsson joining Fulham?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just, just as David raised the point about us needing strikers and everyone else has, a week ago everyone, or certainly leading up, has been saying we need another centre back, a big one, and lo and behold, we get one of the names of the European tournament, and you know, you always have to be a bit wary about that, but he, you know, he has a good pedigree, and you know, he's either Hanglund replacement we've been after for the last few years, you know, Scandinavian, and That's all you can hope for, really. But the interesting one for me is, again, we now have, what, 5 centre-backs? So one of them will probably be off, I think, said already. I think that'd be Stearman. But then, you know, Callis and Madel have played really well. Madel playing on the left side, which isn't his natural side. So the real interesting point there is, you know, I'm not sure he will start tomorrow, but going forward, what does the back four line up as with regards to 2 centre backs? But of course, it also gives you the option to go to 3 as well. So
absolutely.
We talk about the attacking midfielders. You know, if you potentially you drop one or two full backs and and put wider men there, you've got three solid defenders. So, you know, again, it goes back to the options, and you need quality, and we just know, don't we? No matter how well Ream and, you know, Stearman did play in the end on Wednesday, we've seen them in the Championship, and together, you know, if they ended up, you know, for whatever reasons, if Callis and Maddle were injured, and we had those two starting at centre back in any league game, you know, we'd all be concerned, wouldn't we? So you need to strengthen in positions, and that's what this has done. And it gives, you know, luckily for Callis and Maddle is that they can play in other positions. So one of those could go right back, and Odell could go left back. So, you know, it's definite plus, and I think he's going to do really well. He'll suit the Championship, and yeah, can't wait to see him play, really.
I'm looking forward to it too, Mike, and like you just mentioned, a very interesting way that you put it is that, again, it's about flexibility, because you could play three at the back now if you wanted to, and you could move the pieces around if you want. It gives more options to Jurkanović, and I'm looking forward to seeing him play. David, thoughts of the new signing? Sigurdsson coming to fall.
If I could just record a tape and play it for all the new signings, you know, it's the same in everything, really, for me. I need to see these guys. I need to see how they perform individually. I need to see how they fit in with the rest of the team. But it does throw up an interesting question formation-wise. You know, now he has maybe three centre-backs he likes. Do we go back to three at the back, which is quite a radical change from the system we've been playing? Or does it mean someone gets the push? And as I alluded to earlier, I thought it might be Malone. I think Mike just basically described the same thing with Odoi maybe going to left back and maybe Callis going to right back. I believe he played there. I don't see Maddle going to right back potentially, because I think he's been done such good sort of Aaron Hughes-esque man marking job in the middle. I would be very surprised if they wanted to change that. But you know, who knows until tomorrow? This is going to be the interesting thing. Obviously, the business was done early enough in the week that he could be involved. I mean, likewise today with Cabano. I noticed they announced it exactly at midday, which meant that technically he's qualified as well to play tomorrow, if he's going to figure, perhaps on the bench at least. I'm not really sure. It might be a big ask from them. But, you know, again, these people, they're bringing them in. I assume they're bringing them in to play. So we're going to see them in some shape or form. I really, you know, I'd be very wary about disrupting the Callis and Maddle partnership, which has done so well so far. But, you know, who knows how it will all fare until we see what, you know, what our Icelandic friend can do. I mean, certainly a Nordic feel, I think, to some of our signings, isn't it? It seems to like a few of the guys from the Scandinavian countries and Iceland. Perhaps it's all that playing football in the cold there makes them a bit tougher. So England, you know, should be a cinch for them, really. Even a cold night up north should be no worries for these guys. It'd be like a heat wave for them. So we're not expecting to see any guys who, you know, can't perform week in, week out. You know, good people with tough constitutions, and certainly these Icelandics had tough constitutions. You know, massively overperformed at the Euros, did really, really well, made England look really poor. You know, sometimes we do that ourselves anyway, but, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see this guy. I think, actually, so far out of the signings, I'm most excited by this one, believe it or not.
Okay, very good there, David. Mike, before we get into our preview, there's one thing that I want to ask you about, and it talks about this player, but players in general. You know, I want to get your thoughts on this. I've been talking to a few people about this. Sigurdsson actually had some interest from some Premier League teams, or at least the speculation was that he did. When I listened to his interview, he had some nice things to say about Fulham, but he mentioned one thing that stood out to me that I think is a draw that I don't think we talk enough about. He mentioned that playing in London, he always wanted to come to England. So he really emphasized when I watched this, playing in London. So, Mike, do you think that this gives us an advantage on getting certain players just because Fulham are in London? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, it should do, certainly. I mean, you know, it's the capital city, and that's, you know, it has to be a selling point. You know, I'm sure we can't compete on certain other aspects, you know, wages-wise. There's other teams who can offer more. I mean, but, yeah, I mean, also, Ida Good Johnson tweeted that we'd got him as well, so I'm pretty sure he would have spoke to him about the club. So, you have to use everything to try and get some of these players to come and join you. In the end, if he has had people in the Premier League after him and he's signed for a Championship side, we have to sell all the good aspects of being a Fulham player, and a nice house on the outskirts of London would go down well. But the good thing is, one of the good things about all the signings, he's an exception because he's 30, and we've given him a couple of years contract. And anyone who follows me on Twitter will see that I've posted a couple of things on contracts. And, they're all 25, 27, they're all getting three years plus another year option. So I don't want to bore anyone on FFP, but it's one of those situations where you're buying a team, and yes, teams change every year, but these players are signed up for a long time. These are on, 3 year plus contracts is an awful lot. So that gives us some good value if it comes to when we, selling them. If we sell them in a couple of years. So it's good planning, I think, for Fulham to give us some stability, hopefully, going forward.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right. Glad that we could touch on that and talk a little bit about FFP at the very end. All right, let's get into our preview of Blackburn. I'm just going to share some information with you guys real quick to get us into our preview. It is from whoscored.com. Just again, some information. This is from them, team characteristics of Blackburn. They left no strengths. That's just number one. Just keep that in mind. Blackburn's weaknesses: weak in aerial duels, avoiding individual errors, protecting the lead. They're very weak at avoiding offside, defending against attacks down the wings, and defending against long shots. Their style: attacking down the left, playing with width, playing in their own half. They rotate their first 11. Then we move on to the predictions from whoscore.com. I'll just go right down there. It says, basement club Blackburn picked up their first point of the new season in a 2-2 draw with Burton last weekend. So they were denied victory by a late equalizer. Holm had put an internal wrangles and transfer policy behind them to take 8 points from their first four games. Both sides are still wanting to add to their squads, which may fire up those who don't want to be replaced, expect goals, and in a way win. They are, who scored is predicting a 3-2 Fulham victory. Also, just want to mention some information from the Fulham website. They had an article today. I definitely recommend going checking out. It's called Inside Ewood Park. It was an interview with Blackburn's fan Adam Wilson, and he's now, I'm going to share some information that he shared about this. Here was the first question to him. It's not been a great start for Blackburn this season. What have you made of it? And his answer, to be honest, I think this was expected from ourselves and the bookies, given that year on year we seem to sell our best players and not really recruit anyone. The managerial appointment was considered fairly controversial, and that's mixed with the sale of key players. We need something to change quickly. Okay, then we go on and says, which players stand out for you? He then responds, Ben Marshall is by far our best player. He scores quite a lot of goals from distance, and he's comfortable taking on players. Danny Graham and Anthony Stokes have a bit of experience. We'll be looking to those two to hopefully score a few goals then this season, looking for a few goals. Which Fulham players do you think could cause you problems on Saturday? He obviously mentions Tom Kearney. And then last 2 points, what sort of game are you anticipating? In response, both teams played 120 minutes during midweek. As we can see some tired legs, I'm unsure whether this will lead to a KG 0-0 or goals galore with a few defensive mistakes. What score prediction are you going for? And again, this fan of Blackburn, Adam Wilson, is predicting a 3-1 Fulham victory. I just can't see us getting anything from the game with the amount of goals we are conceding at the moment. I would take a point. Okay, and that's just some information. Again, please do check out Adam's thoughts on the match. It's right on the Fulham website. It's called Inside Ewood Park. Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just thoughts on the information I just shared, just to give us a backdrop of this match against Blackburn.
Last year it was by far the worst performance I saw, and there were a lot of bad performances, but we just did not turn up. So, you know, but Blackburn have had a rough time in the summer. They, you know, Owen Coyle, whose name was mentioned about, you know, at the time of our last change of manager, but a couple of the guys in America where you've been managing said, no, please don't, you know. So he's
definitely
his reputation.
Not. Definitely not.
His reputation isn't what it used to be. I've also seen the Blackburn Trust have now asked the owners to officially put the club up for sale. And it's all very sad to see in one way. You know, our chairman gets an awful lot of abuse. Some of it, you know, may be justified. But, you know, sometimes it's better the devil you know, because do you want the Benkies coming along and buying your club? So, unfortunately, and Dave will remember this, the Tignor promotion year, it was ourselves, Blackburn and Bolton. Bolton got relegated last year. I can see Blackburn getting relegated this year. You know, and it's sad to see, really, because I've got a little bit of a soft spot for them. And they are selling their players and they're not really replacing them. So I think they're bottom as well, aren't they? So, yeah, we should be going there to make up for the dreadful performance of last year on non-performance. And, you know, going to the break, still unbeaten. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. But, you know, there's still a job to be done.
I agree, Mike. And I remember you telling us and describing the match last season, how dreadful it was. And I watched the replay, and it was pretty bad. So this is an opportunity to fix that by getting a victory at Ewood Park. David, over to you. Thoughts on Blackburn, and who are your key players tomorrow for Paul?
Yeah, well, this is a banana skin we want to avoid. You know, this is a perfect chance, not just to make up for last season, but maybe to make up for the last couple of games where, you know, we've dropped a point or two, where, you know, in the league, I mean, obviously, especially the Leeds match, where, you know, really the game should have been ours, we were the better team. And even Cardiff, we had the game under control, we controlled it for long periods, but in the end, had a sneaky point. So, forget last season, that's gone. You know, let's make up for this season so far and see, you know, if we really want to mount a challenge, we've got to be winning these games. Whether we do or not is another matter. You know, traditionally we haven't been doing so well up there, but Preston is only around the corner geographically from Blackburn, so maybe we can put that one to bed as well now. We can go up to places in the northwest and win. Let's not be fearful of that. You know, we've got a good start. Blackburn, you know, unfortunately, you're a club in trouble at the moment and in turmoil. So let's take advantage of that. We thought we had problems moaning about Craig Klein and Mike Rigg and Shahid Khan and Tony Khan and everybody else. But, you know, it's a cakewalk compared to what they have at Blackburn, I think. Fulham key players, it's going to be depending on what system we play, really. I think it really is. But I think the key player will probably be Aluku, actually, for me, because I want to see how they utilise him with the expected absence of Floyd Aiti. And my gut feeling is if he plays the same formation, he'll actually put Aluku out there on the left, where he put him for the last bit at home to Cardiff last Saturday. And he put a fantastic crossing on his left foot as well as being, of course, if you remember, the architect of both goals. I think he created both goals with his little darting runs in the area. So I think he won't be a loss out there. I think he can contribute from there. So if he can make up for the perceived absence of Aiti, I think he will be my star man tomorrow. If he can run at their defence and cause them problems. And I think you said they don't like high balls. So we've got to play Matt Smith as well then. Give him service and he can, like, you know, actually cause them some problems up front.
Very good there, David. All right, Mike, over to you. Just for time's sake, we have to speed this up just a little bit. What do Fulham need to do to win this match tomorrow?
Yeah, make up for the last two games, but I think just play pretty much the way they have been doing, and they should be strong enough to get a result tomorrow. For me, the key players will be McDonald and Parker, who I expect to start, and Aluku as well, who I think will move up to the sort of point man position, the main forward. So those three players for me, I expect to be the strongest and or the most important, I should say. And yeah, just continue doing what we have been doing. You know, like I say, I think that will be strong enough for beating Blackburn.
Okay, very good, Mike. I'm going to go right back to you. What would be your starting 11 tomorrow?
My starting 11, I think, you know, Button should still be in goal. I would go with the fullbacks of Adoree and Sessegnon. I think he deserves it after last week. I'd stick with the normal centre-backs we've had, Callison and Maddell. McDonald and Parker deserve to be the two main central midfielders. And wide, I would actually go with... well, when I say wide, I sort of the midfield, the two wider midfielders, I would go with Kearney, and I would go with LVC, to be honest, after his performance the other day. And then if he's fit after his run out the other day, I'll give Josabad a start behind Aluku, and that would be my lineup. I don't think it's going to be that, but that's what I would go with.
Okay, very good. David, how about you? What would you do for a starting 11?
Button in goal, certainly. I think we will see maybe Callis at right back. You know, Thor the Great, whatever he was, Sigurdsson and Madley in the middle, and Odoi moves to left back. Parker and McDonald, as Mike said. Kearney on one side, Aluko on the other, Smith up top, and in the hole, that's the interesting one now. Who will they put in the hole? Hopefully it won't be Christensen, because that was awful last year. We could obviously put Christensen on the left and Aluko in the hole, but I'd actually like to see in the hole. I don't, maybe give Josabed a go if his legs can take it after the other night. If not, you know, will we see one of our new guys? Will we see Cabin or something? I'm not sure if it's too soon for him, but why not give him a run, because that is his position, give him a chance to go to a weaker team, perhaps.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, time for predictions. I'm going to start with the Cottage Talk Twitter page. I had 219 votes, a good amount of votes, and I just asked, what is your prediction for Fulham against Blackburn? Win, 84%, draw, 13%, loss, only 3%. So... obviously, the Fulham supporters are definitely taking a win in this match. Unfortunately, I don't have time to read the predictions from the Fulham supporters on the Facebook page. There are a good amount of them, and I haven't looked at all of them, but the majority are picking a victory, so I'll just mention that. Guys, I'll now go to you for your predictions. First, I will start with Mr. Mike Gregg. Prediction for the match tomorrow?
2-0 to us.
2-0. Okay, very good. David Holley. Your prediction. Now, it's always interesting the way David predicts. Is he going to predict a loss because he really wants him to win, or where are you going to go on this, David? I'm curious. David? Did I lose David? Okay, it looks like I lost David, or maybe he dialed back. Are you still with me, Mike?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I don't know where David went. David must have dropped off. Okay, so I don't have a prediction from David, which is fine. Mike, I will give you my prediction, and I'm actually going to predict. I'm going to go with a 2-0 victory, just like you, because great minds think alike. So I'm going to go with a 2-0 victory as well. Like I said, I'm not sure what happened to David. Maybe he dropped off the line. So fortunately, David, I couldn't read your prediction or give you a prediction because you weren't there at the very end. Mike, before we leave, any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, just say it's been a good week. You know, a week ago following the game and Jurkanovic's comments, you know, it was all a bit of a downer, a lot of angry people, including myself. But it settled down. They've now delivered with three potentially good players. We've got a game tomorrow which we should win to go into the break unbeaten. So all is well at the moment, I would say.
Yeah. No, very, very good there, Mike. My final thought involves the show, Cottage Talk. We just passed our 5-year anniversary yesterday of the show, and all of my co-hosts are a major part of the success. I started this 5 years ago yesterday with Kyle Vaughn, and Kyle, you know, really wanted to do a show and asked me to do it, and we did it. And then Kyle moved to Australia to broadcast baseball games, and we really couldn't do it together. We just couldn't get the connection to work. So then I had to find other people to do it with me, and thankfully Dan Crawford really filled in at the beginning of that period in the first season after Kyle left. So I was able to continue on, and then we've had so many different co-hosts. It's really been wonderful. So I'm very happy that we've gone 5 years, and I look forward to be doing this for a much longer time. I want to thank you, Mike, and I believe David dialed back in. Let me just bring him on. David, you back with us?
Hey.
Okay.
I was going to sit on the fence anyway, Russ, so you didn't miss anything.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Well, hey, give me your prediction before we go.
That was sitting on the fence. I was just... last time it worked at Preston, I went for 1-1 and we won. So I'm going to go for 1-1 again, and hopefully the magic will wear off. Come off or something. Anyway, another Goldman. Definitely shouldn't have had
okay.
that glass of rosé before we came on.
Okay. Very good, David. And like I was mentioning before we go, I just want to say thank you to you, thank you to Mike, because we've now gone 5 years into the history of College Talk. I know you came in, I want to say 2 years into it, so thank you to you and Mike as well. And it really has been wonderful, and the show just continues to grow. And I just want to thank all the co-hosts and obviously everyone that listens. So, but it is time to wrap up the show. Great show, guys. Great show. And like I mentioned, we will be doing our end of the transfer window special on Wednesday. I will have the time, hopefully by the end of the weekend, when we're going to be doing that. And that point, we will be talking about all the signings, which I'm looking forward to doing. We will be talking about that article by Sam Wallace entitled "Why Data Analyst Craig Klein Will Have Final Say at Fulham and Not Manager Sadiq Yokanovich," and it really talks about the both boxes check system. We'll go into detail about that on Wednesday. I think we need more time to really talk about that, and also be talking about Andy Glockner's article that he wrote today that talks a little bit about this system. So we'll be talking about analytics, all the signings on Wednesday, but it is time to go. For David Holly and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to College Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, David.
Good night, Mike. Good night, Russ. Good night, everyone.
Boys.